Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners. I just want you to know that I love you little scumbags. I don't know why I'm calling you scumbags, it's just one of my favorite words. But I'm grateful you stay with me because I was late this week on the episode because I had a, let's go with longer than a 24-hour migraine. And yeah, but I love that you appreciate the show and I appreciate you and I am grateful for you. So let's get into the case. First of all, this episode was suggested by one of our amazing listeners. They recommended the content of this episode, and you guys always have really good ideas, so please feel free to DM or email us your suggestions at Seven Deadly Sinners Podcast on Instagram or at sevendeadlysinnerspodcast@gmail.com. But now for the trigger warning. This episode includes graphic descriptions of the sexual abuse and grooming of children in what is perceived to be a safe Christian setting. So please take care when listening. Nothing screams the perfect childhood summer like grass stains, skinned knees, rope courses, not showering for a week, like why bother since you have pool time, and eating s'mores while singing kumbaya around a bonfire with your fellow musty-smelling, crusty-clothed new BFFs. It's summer camp. Let that nostalgia sink in. Take a deep breath and remember those crushes on camp counselors, being hesitant to take group showers so you just didn't shower at all. The camaraderie, the boys, the babes, the bug bites, and the bug juice. For a week, and for the lucky ones, a couple weeks, you could forget your worries and be a kid. You could forget about your chores and watching your younger siblings before the impending doom of the school year. And for those lucky enough to get paid to work there, this was pure perfection. And here's a news spot of the camp we are going to cover in this episode before scandal took over their news coverage. This is from KARK Channel 4 News in Little Rock.
Fun and family. That's what one camp program is hoping to give children this summer. Kennecook Christian Summer Camp is already in full swing with kids learning the fundamentals of faith and friendship. Star Peterson, the site director for the camp, says that she has been coming to the camp for the past 9 years and considers summer camps not only essential for kids, but a family tradition.
And my parents actually met at camp. My brother, sister, and I all grew up coming to Kennecook camps. And once I was in college, I truly wanted to work at camp.
The camp runs for 1 week with the camp first stopping in Conway and then coming to Little Rock. The camp features rock wall climbing and water slides.
But beyond the sunburns and poison ivy, some of these camps sing a more sinister song. And this episode will explain why that clip from many years ago absolutely did not age well. Founded in 1926, Branson-based Camp Kennecook has claimed to transform entire families, and their current website states that our mission of Kennecook Ministries is to equip... I gotta pull myself together here with the laughing. Okay. The mission of Kennecook Ministries is to equip next-generation leaders. We accomplish this through life-changing experiences, godly relationships, and spiritual training. Kennecook provides campers... The reason why I'm laughing is campers with a K. Are you a fucking Kardashian? The opportunity to play, laugh, and learn in a safe and spiritually encouraging environment. And bear with me here, we're going to have to go through the K nonsense a little longer. They offer many different camp offerings throughout the country. And they not only offer overnight camp, but they have day camp, family camp, and specialty camps at more than $1,000 per person per week. Now, would we call that the most cost-effective these days with current inflation rates? Regardless, the ministry is a multi-million dollar global enterprise. And their camps? Well, they're considered the largest evangelical sports summer camp in the world. Guys, I have to stop laughing here. Kate, our research assistant, wrote this script. And I kind of improvised some of the Kardashian stuff before I read down and saw that she'd also written that. But when she added cost with a K, to make fun of them. I couldn't stop laughing. So I apologize. I will, I'll be a more adult type person in a second.
If you got to go to Kennecook, it says something about your family. It said something about your finances. It said something about your kids. It was a privilege.
Kennecook is a Christian camp. It's thought of overall as being very wholesome. When we sent our daughter there, she said something that was really haunting. She said, "Look, Mom, these people aren't who you think they are. It's all a big lie."
Kennecook claims to have welcomed more than 500,000 campers and more than 50,000 staff members from all over the world at their sites in Missouri, Illinois, Texas, all with the goal of equipping these Jesus followers with the skills and truths necessary to, quote, impact their schools and communities as examples of Jesus Christ. It is said that camp officials have been known to cohort with powerful people, like the heir to the Coors Brewery, thus drawing those that can afford the hefty price tag of whatever camp experience they choose. An IRS filing in 2019 shows the organization ranked in $31.6 million in 2019. And here's a clip from a 2020 Emmy Award-winning documentary about Kennecook called A Christian Summer Camp's History of Abuse, which I highly recommend viewing, and it's just 17 minutes long. And while I'm sure the majority of those 500,000 plus campers and staff members have good and pure intentions, I believe that. But how does that saying go? You only need one bad apple to spoil the whole bunch? The claims around prevalent sexual abuse at the camp spread more deep and wide, and the voices of campers singing sad songs in their bunks before bedtime. And here it is, just one example, in a scathing article from USA Today last year. Quote, "A camper named Carolyn attended the camp in Branson, Missouri, many times. But the summer of 2016 was different. She was 13 at the time, and told the national publication that one night, every single camper of approximately 300 was packed tightly into a group and bubbles were thrown on them. I imagine it was intended to be innocent, like an innocent bubble party of sorts. But then Caroline alleged that she felt a male camper grope her underneath her shorts in the bubble chaos. The next morning, according to USA Today, three other girls also claimed to have been assaulted by the same camper. It's unclear in my research whether this was someone of the same age or a camp counselor, but based on how the evidence was compiled in the article, the girls still regardless reported the events to their camp counselor, and a meeting was arranged with Keith Chansey, camp director. And this is where you would expect camp leaders to protect the victims and remove the problematic camper from the premises, but that would be wrong. Quote, "We believe in salvation. We don't believe in punishment. Jesus forgives, and we are going to forgive the camper." Carolyn said the camp director told her that and reiterated it to the newspaper. She said, quote, "We're going to help him through his problems." And I suppose the accused camper gave it his best effort. Maybe the old college try. And that's sarcasm there. Caroline recalled accusing the boy being brought into a meeting, and then he admitted he may have groped the girls. But, and this kind of boils my blood to even say this out loud, according to USA Today, the camp director wanted the girls to apologize to the boy for making the accusation. Again, let me restate. They wanted the girls to apologize to this boy for making the accusation. But our girl Carolyn refused, and I give her a standing ovation for doing that at age 13, when an authority figure has an agenda and is steering things in an absolute gaslighty direction. I understand why the newspaper didn't use her last name, but damn, I wish I could interview her now, because I hope she is doing well. But she's a tough SOB. But when young Carolyn asked to go home, she was told by staff she could only leave if she were injured. Staff assured her that her parents would be made aware of the incident. Yeah, that's absolutely not what happened. Her parents asked her about the ill-fated bubble party when she finally returned home, and it was obvious they hadn't been given the details. She told USA Today, quote, 13 is an impressionable year for any child. You're growing up, becoming a teenager, hanging around boys. It was a turning point in my life, but not everything is cracked up to what it seems. Kennecook is a fun-loving place in some senses, but this situation made me realize it wasn't right. End quote. It became clear that the camp's flagship Branson location was not keen on punishment, but more repentance and forgiveness. Though to me, it seems more like a sweeping things under the rug approach in the hopes of continuing to rake in millions of dollars summer after summer. But Carolyn's account is just the tip of the iceberg. Through the diligent work of the Springfield News leader, it became clear that a trend was emerging in the Kennecook camp. Leaders repeatedly disregarded red flags over the years and instead sought to minister to the accused rather than helping victims seek justice. And they're all drinking that bug juice. And here's a different example, though. The eyes of another camper is told through her mother, Amanda Tackett. This is next-level gaslighting.
Amanda Tackett's daughter was 10 years old when she came home from her Christian summer camp and said she'd seen a staffer sexually abusing a young boy in the woods.
I called the camp. You know, they told me, oh, thank you so much for telling us, and we're going to fully investigate this, and we'll get back to you. And they called me the next morning. They said that they had completed their investigation, and they said that they were very concerned about our family, and they were very concerned about my daughter's spiritual walk with God. And I was just furious, because that's not an investigation.
It's just a pretty toxic culture, and I could go on a very long tangent, but I will refrain. I think this example speaks for itself. Pete Newman. We're going to begin discussing him in length. It seems that hired staff wasn't as vetted as it might have assumed by parents willingly paying the big bucks to send their kids into nature for a week or two. But USA Today exposed these bad hires, even though the camp repeatedly denied and downplayed allegations in the past. But here's their short list. Corby Dale Grimes was a counselor at Kennecook in the 1970s and 1980s, and he was sentenced to life in prison in 2002 for sexually abusing a boy in Texas in 99. His trial revealed that he had been fired from the camp after an incident that involved a male camper. Ed Ringham, a camp counselor in the 1990s, who was eventually convicted of sex-related felonies involving underage boys, one of whom was a camper at Kennecook. Chuck Price, a programs director at the camp in the 90s, who was fired after complaints of groping young girls. Lee Bradbury pleaded guilty to two Class B felonies in 2012 involving first-degree child molestation and Class D felony of sexual misconduct involving a child under the age of 15. Paul Kerr, a former Kennecook counselor that was hired in 1998, pleaded guilty to felony sex assault of a child, as well as two other misdemeanor charges in Colorado. It is alleged by the advocacy website Facts About Kennecook, run by family members and victims, that at least 60 reports of abuse have been collected thus far, dating back as far as the 1950s. But the main abuser that we are going to be focusing on is the camp's serial abuser and sports camp counselor Pete Newman. We are talking accusations about naked basketball, camp sleepovers, skinny dipping, and naked four-wheeling, exploiting dozens of underage campers. And that clip we heard from Amanda's mom earlier? Yeah, the counselor in question was none other than Pete Newman. Pete was a popular counselor and a beloved figure at Kennecook, almost a figurehead. And he rose up through the ranks, eventually becoming director at the Branson camp. He was a bit of a legend, keeping in touch with campers outside of summer trips, and spending time with them on mission trips and recruiting tours. And some of his victims allege the abuse spanned years of their childhoods and beyond, which is heartbreaking. One of the victims that really stood out to me, though, was in Branson, Missouri. He was a man named Evan. The newly married Evan recalled getting a phone call from Pete in 2009 with a prayer request telling him, quote, "Things are getting crazy. You're going to hear some stuff and I just need prayers." After that brief phone call, Evan confessed to his wife that Pete had sexually abused him from 1999 until 2003 at the Branson Kanakuk camp. Evan met Pete in seventh grade at Youth Life in 1999. He was a charismatic, fun, good-looking, athletic kid. He was just a guy in his mid-20s, the kind of guy who drew people in, kids and adults alike. I'm sure we all have known someone that kind of had that magnetic personality that commands attention, and hopefully they use that persona for good. The abuse was not just sexual, but also physical and spiritual, stopping only when Evan began seriously dating his future wife, Madison. Initially, Evan said he was a bit bitter that Pete pulled away from their mentoring relationship. And this makes me sick to even say, but Pete Newman performed Evan and Madison's wedding ceremony. Evan told the news leader that he chose Pete to perform the nuptials because he was the most spiritual person in his life. He said, quote, "Peter Newman was the guy that all kids wanted to be when they grew up. And I still had been aware of what had gone on. But at that point, I didn't know. I'd been so successfully groomed in this entire process that I still didn't realize it was wrong. I think that's something you can only understand if you've been groomed and abused. The connection is so deep and the loyalty is so strong that you essentially kind of do whatever to keep that relationship," end quote. Looking back on it now, Evan told the newspaper that the couple is going to renew their vows to remove that dark cloud Pete cast on their wedding day. Pete Newman was fired from camp in 2009 after writing a confession letter to Kanakuk leadership naming 15 boys he had abused. According to factsaboutkanakuk.com, signed statements from Kanakuk leaders made no mention at the time of contacting law enforcement or legal authorities. Also in a signed statement from 2009, camp CEO John White admitted he knew of Newman's naked hot tub sessions, mutual masturbation, and nude running through the camp with minors. Leaders eventually contact some victims' families and tell them they learned of the abuse because of a tip from a hotline. Joe White then begins the process of showering family members with gifts, free camp tuition, Disney vacations, iPads, you name it. Pete Newman's luck ran out and he was arrested. On June 9th, 2010, he pleaded guilty in Taney County Court to 8 charges of sexually abusing 6 children in connection with his role as a counselor and director at nearby Kanakuk. He was 34 at the time, and a prosecutor told the news leader that Newman had admitted to sexual activity with as many as 13 minors. That number would skyrocket in following years as a civil lawsuit was filed claiming that Newman had abused scores of additional underage victims, linking to the camp. Advocates for the victims have said the number of victims in this case could be well into the 100s. Pete Newman is currently serving back-to-back life sentences, plus 30 years, in the Missouri State Prison System. And a judge later found that parents had been trying to warn Kanakuk staff about Newman for years. And here's another clip from the Emmy Award-winning documentary where Brandy and Joe Alcaron share their fears about what is continuing to happen at the camp after their son Ashton's experience.
One of the biggest questions I get all the time is, but what's happening today? What's happening at the camp right now that makes it unsafe for my child to be there? The leadership that allowed Pete Newman to be there and sexually molest, sodomize, and abuse children, that same leadership is still functioning and at large there at camp today. So why would you want your child to be there?
Who's responsible for what happened?
the entire leadership, Joe White, the board, Kanakuk, from what we have learned, they all played a part in that decision.
And who's been held accountable?
Nobody.
Does it turn anyone else's stomach to think the camp is still active today under the same leadership? And the most parents probably aren't even aware of the allegations. This story has been in the media and a little bit over several years, but we haven't heard all of it until one of you sent us a link and warned us all about it. Ashton began attending camp when he was 10. He described himself as a bit shorter, a bit slower, and a bit weaker than others. But when he caught the eye of Pete Newman, well, this is a trigger warning. This is a very graphic clip.
And so Pete had asked my parents if it was okay if I spend 2 days or so with him. And so Joe White, the owner, vouched for Pete and said, yeah, like that's fine. Like tons of kids do it all the time. Of course, I was super excited at the time. And then that's when like any parent's worst nightmare or any kid's worst nightmare came into reality. When we got in the hot tub, that's when he started asking me to do like explicit things. And he was like running around nude. And then he would like go inside and ask you to play like sexual games with him. When you're in that situation, you're so young, never actually thinking that would happen. I mean, 12 years old, what was I gonna do?
When they learned their son was a victim, the Alarcones reached out to the camp, which they say offered free vacations, free weeks at camp, and sent them gifts like an iPad and fruit baskets. Camp leadership addressed the allegations against Newman with a statement that they were, quote, deeply saddened and shocked. The Alarcones say initially they believed that, but things quickly changed.
We learned that Pete Newman had written a list of the boys that he could remember having been inappropriate with and having sexual relations with and molesting. And Joe White contacted us and said, I'm happy to report that your son's name is on that list, but Pete divided it into two columns. One of boys that he had close interactions with but did not molest or sodomize in any way, and then another list of those that he did. And I'm happy to report that Ashton's in the list that was not touched physically. And so we were like, we want to see this list for ourselves. We had an appointment with Jeff Merrill, the district attorney, and they provided us the copy. And there was no separation. There was no column.
At that point in time, it was confirmed that we knew that Joe White was lying to us.
The only way we were going to know the truth was to hire an attorney.
The Alarcones family filed a civil suit in 2011 and claimed the camp was liable because they'd been aware of allegations as far back as 1999, in which Pete Newman acted inappropriately with minors through circumstances involving hot tub Bible studies, streaking, and the like. The suit alleged that Newman wasn't fired or investigated or held responsible in any way. And the camp failed to report the claims to law enforcement. Instead, the camp made note of these behaviors in incident reports. Prosecutors produced an action plan implemented by way of the camp back in 2003 to correct Pete's behavior. Corrective actions included, according to factsaboutkanuk.com, asking Pete to show restraint with one-on-one sleepovers, a probationary agreement acknowledging his sexual improprieties with young boys, a psychological evaluation that was eventually canceled. Once a psychologist indicates the behavior is potentially reportable and requiring Pete meet with the attorney for training on, quote, legal implications of sexual misconduct. Well, this is an absolute slap in the face to the affected campers and their parents. And it's just merely a slap on the wrist to an obvious sexual predator. Camp founder and CEO Joe White defended the decision to keep Pete on staff in deposition in 2012, calling the behavior inappropriate and immature and a show of poor judgment. But he further described Pete's character as outstanding, saying that he was an outstanding role model and that had drowned his poor behavior in judgment. Joe and camp leadership claimed they were never aware that Pete was sexually abusing kids and claim once they realized the deception, they fired him immediately and reported him to authorities. But I'm pretty confident that is a lie. I don't see how all of these accusations could be made and not mention any of the sexual abuse that went on. No charges were brought against any additional Kanakuk staff, which I also find pretty shocking. In a statement on the camp's website, staff addresses the behaviors of Newman, saying, quote, "Tragically, more than 12 years ago, one of our staff members was accused and convicted for abusing campers. And we were devastated by the deception practices of this individual and continue to grieve with victims and their families. We've said it before, and we will say it again. We are forever sorry for the pain inflicted on victims and their families." Following the events of 2009, Kanakuk has continued to work tirelessly to help ensure that this deeply deceptive and abusive behavior does not happen again. Our Kanakuk Child Protection Plan, which contains over 340 identifiable and measurable protective elements, is integrated throughout our organization and has been shared with more than 600 youth-serving organizations across the country. In 2014, a judge ruled that the camp couldn't be held liable for Pete Newman's behavior because the molestation and sexual abuse was not done in furtherance of Kanakuk's business. The total number of settlements paid out by the camp, aside from the gifts of vacations, free camp, etc., remains unknown. Most of the settlements contain non-disclosure clauses, which prevent accusers from speaking out. Some still chose to speak out to Vice News under anonymity. The Alcon family is the only family that refused to sign an NDA in their settlement agreement, and Kanakuk is still intimidating them through lawyers and asking courts to force them to sign the NDA in an effort to bully the family into silence. As far as what they're speaking out about, it's pretty heartbreaking to think about what they're experiencing as a family, not to mention financially. In their fight to protect their innocent children, Joe said in another interview that he felt he had, quote, "delivered my son to the devil." And here's that clip.
"I couldn't allow these young men, knowing what they went through, to be slapped in the face again. And their response was a slap in their face."
"It's real that we were lied to by the camp. It's real that they're covering things up still to this day. And I really want the camp leadership to step down and let there be a third-party accountability. I want the voices of the victims to come first and foremost."
"Is there fear in speaking out?"
"Absolutely.
Absolutely.
That's why so many families haven't."
"What's the fear?"
"That Kanakuk will come after us a second time and sanction us or sue us again."
Another family suffered the same fate, and they spoke to WSMV Channel 4 in May of 2022. And here's a bit of their story.
"Family is breaking their silence, saying their son suffered years of sexual abuse by a senior camp counselor at one of the country's largest Christian camps attended by many youth in Middle Tennessee."
News 4's Holly Thompson sat down with the family as they relived this tragic story.
"They say these years of sexual abuse could have been prevented. Lies, negligence, and a cover-up, all claims this family tells me that involved the camp's leadership that they want held accountable."
"A lot of kids would be like, you know, I want to be like Pete whenever I grow up."
Seen here in a Kanakuk counselor playbook, Pete Newman's often described as the face of Kanakuk camps. Popular and charismatic, Newman was a lead counselor and later promoted to camp director at Kanakuk, considered one of the elite and largest Christian camps with about 20,000 kids attending each summer. Logan Yandell is now 27, but started attending Kanakuk in Branson, Missouri at age 7.
"He was our little boy that we sent to camp to have fun and have a spiritual mentor and have wonderful experiences. And it was just honestly the worst mistake we could have ever made as parents was to send him to that camp.
He worked for years to groom me into trusting him enough to get into this place where he could, you know, molest me.
Letters and phone calls, eventually alone time with Pete, then mission trips, even a visit to Pete's personal residence, all among the places where Logan's family says he was sexually abused by Pete from age 9 to 13. Logan wasn't alone.
I would gladly trade my life if I could take back the things that I've done and the pain that I've caused.
In June of 2010, Pete Newman pleaded guilty to 7 counts of sexually abusing boys, and he's now serving 2 life sentences plus 30 years. But the story doesn't end there.
No normal adult would have allowed another adult that rode naked with children on four-wheelers or skinny dipped or anything else, no normal adult would have allowed that person to stay in their camp at all.
Victims and their families wrote an open letter to camp leadership asking for 3 things. For Joe White and Kanakuk to admit that they knew when they knew it and be held accountable. And they asked for an independent investigation to be run on Kanakuk, and they want victims to be released from their NDAs so they can share their stories. With NDAs in place, it's impossible to know the depth of the deception the camp leaders and Pete Newman himself inflicted on them. But what we do know is the civil suits against Pete Newman have resulted in ordering him to pay $29.6 million to victims and their families as of February 2022. For now, further action against the camp or voluntary resignation of staff leadership remain to be seen. And still yet, every summer, kids and families travel there and to other camps that may or may not be properly vetted or perform proper background checks on their staff. If you have reservations about any camp program you're thinking about sending a child to, I implore you to speak with camp administration to judge how they address your concerns and what measures they take to keep campers safe. If you or a loved one is a victim of sexual abuse, there is help out there. Call the National Sexual Abuse Hotline at 1-800-655-4673. And thank you guys so much for listening. I'm sorry this was a slightly haphazard episode. Again, the migraine. But I appreciate you guys so much. And if you're enjoying the show, please leave a 5-star rating and positive review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen. I really do appreciate it. Thanks. And I love you.